All right, well, thank you. Today, just to get you up to speed what we're doing, this is part two of Comang's presentation on what is happening with Redeeming Grace Church. I initiated this because I wanted everyone to understand, have a better idea of what I've been up to these last couple years. And Comang spoke to us about 3 weeks ago, roughly, and what he covered, for those of you who weren't here, he gave a very broad overview of the Hmong people, Hmong history and culture, religion, and then their circumstances that led them to coming to the U.S. And so today, he's going to continue the story, and I think that will give us a good background, so today's story will make a little more sense. Today, he's going to talk about a little bit of his personal testimony of coming to faith, but more importantly, how God has used him and how God is bringing about this new church that we've been working on for the last couple years. And I think you'll be very, very moved by the story. It's fun to see God working and how he works. I just want to say one thing in regards to his last presentation, just to clarify something. And I think you guys probably all picked up on this, but just to make sure, we talked about the circumstances surrounding the Hmong coming to America. And I hope you caught that they didn't come here as immigrants. They came here as refugees. And there's a difference. An immigrant is someone who comes to the new land looking forward to it. Their heart is in the new land. This is something they're doing by choice. A refugee is usually coming more by necessity. They don't necessarily want to be here. Their heart is somewhere else. But necessity brings them here. So the Hmong, the vast majority of them came here as refugees. So the transition has been difficult. And it's been a real hard thing for them to deal with. They're doing awesome, though. And I want to read just a quote from a book. I've got a book here called The People's History of the Hmong. And it's written by Paul Hilmer, who is a professor at Concordia St. Paul. And I think he sums it up really well. It's just a brief quote. But this really says what I was just trying to say here. He says, "Being an immigrant, changing your home country is hard enough under the best of circumstances. But refugees, forced to flee from their home countries, endure not only a major relocation, but a situation so dire and need so great that circumstances are almost by definition the worst possible. Far too often, refugees flee to a new country that doesn't want them, live in an environment fraught with adversity, danger, and crushing boredom, and face a disturbingly uncertain future, all after experiencing trauma that would leave most in need of serious therapy." And I think that's very, very adequate description of what the Hmong had to go through to get here. And speaking of difficult transitions, I'm really appreciative that Comang could make it today, because he's got a full day. He went to the airport to drop off his daughter this morning. Now he's going to speak to us. Then he's going to give the sermon at Redeeming Grace, and then he's going to teach a class on fundamentals of the faith. So be praying for him. That's a full day. That drains you. That takes a lot out of you. And I've asked him to try really hard to leave about 10 minutes at the end for questions. So please, if you have questions, just hold them till then. But I will try to keep on top of that. So questions are very welcome at the Q&A period. So with that, Comang, why don't you come and share your story?
Thank you, Paul. Can I just get a show of hands of how many were here during the first presentation? Okay, so that's pretty good. Pretty good. Okay. I want to start off by reading something that I think didn't mean as much to me when I first read this many, many years ago. And as I now look back in recent history of what has happened, it means a whole lot more to me. If you have your Bibles, if you can turn to Proverbs, this is chapter 3. This is just verses 5 and 6. So Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. And I trust that probably the majority of you have this memorized anyway. So as I'm reading it, you'll probably know exactly what I'm reading. So Proverbs 3, this is 5 and 6. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your paths. And that's how all of this started. All of this started not so much with me, but I have to start there, just so you know who's talking to you. So what I'm going to start with is just, for those of you who were here before, you know that I was not born in the United States. I was actually born in Laos. So that's in Southeast Asia. When my parents came here as refugees, that was 1978. And at that time, I'm going to give away my age now. At that time, I was 4. So I came here at the age of 4 with my mom, my dad, and my first cousin, whose dad died in the war, and so he lived with my parents, and he became part of our family. So that is where we came from, Southeast Asia, after the Vietnam War, came here. Why here? Well, here, as you'll find out, is the largest Hmong population in all of the United States, is in the Twin Cities. And you're probably wondering, why? Why would anybody who lived way out in the tropics decide to come and live here in the frozen tundras of Minnesota? Well, I'll tell you why. It's all about God. So, here's the reason. In order for the refugees to come, you needed sponsors. All the ones who were willing to sponsor were the Midwest churches. It was the churches in this area that did the majority of the sponsoring. Every single family that came originally needed a sponsor. The sponsors came from who? From all the churches. Okay? So that's what I mean when I say it's all by God. So because of that, once we got here, and my parents came during, I would roughly want to call it the second wave, the very first wave of Hmong refugees to the United States in this area were really the higher level, those who were higher militarily, those who the U.S. Army, the U.S. CIA, the U.S. CIA, these are the ones who had connections. They were the ones who came to the United States first. They were on the first flights out of Laos, out of Thailand, to the U.S. Now, once that first wave got here, what was allowed was family. So if you have immediate family that is still back in Thailand, back in Laos, and they would like to come here as well, or you would like them to come here, you would need to find someone in the churches who is willing to sponsor them. And then the second wave came. And that's how my parents got here, because my grandfather came in the first wave. When he got here, he originally came to Wisconsin. It was a church in Wisconsin that sponsored him. But then it was First Covenant Church in the east side of St. Paul that took over the sponsorship, and he moved to St. Paul. So it was First Covenant Church in St. Paul. For those of you who are from that area, you kind of know where Johnson High School is. First Covenant Church is right across the street from Johnson High School. Okay, so that is really the church that I grew up in. That is the church that sponsored my family to come here. And as you've kind of pretty much figured out, any Hmong family that came to the U.S. originally in that first or second wave would have been here with the support of the churches. Now, how do you practice a religion that needs your relatives' support to practice it in a country where you're brand new, you have no relatives here, or if you do, the very small amount of them, you cannot practice that religion? And out of obligation and duty, you have your sponsors who sponsored you to come here. Why would you not go to church? All right? You would go to church. So that's what the majority of the families did. They went to church. We had no idea what we were doing. We had no idea what church was. Had no idea who God is. No idea. Okay? To be honest, Church was where cookies were for me. All right, they had really good cookies and juice and all kinds of stuff. That's what I remembered. I remember my mom waking me up, saying, "It's time to go to church." Oh, cookies. Okay, let's go. Well, that's how it all started. So at a very young age, I grew up Christian. My parents did not know that much about the faith. They knew that when we go to church, that there's a God. They knew that Jesus Christ died on the cross for our sins. But if I asked them to explain it much more than that, which I never did, because I had my Sunday school teachers, and so I would ask them. What I found out as time progressed with our church experience is I stayed at First Covenant, grew up, went to youth group, graduated from high school, went to college, and then after college I got married. And after I got married, well, I had to choose between the church I grew up in or the church that my wife grew up in. And guess who won? Yes. She did. So I started attending the church that she grew up in. Now she went, First Covenant is, how many know what covenant is? Heard it? Yes, maybe? Okay. Covenant is Lutheran. This is the way it's been described to me. Lutheran with a Swedish twist. So it's essentially Lutheran, but it's just a lot of Swedes. And that's where covenant is. Well, that's what I grew up with. My wife, on the other hand, she grew up in the Christian Missionary Alliance churches. And that is actually the bulk of the Hmong community in this area. I'd say 80% of them attend a Christian Missionary Alliance. Those who are Christian, those who profess to be Christian, they attend Christian Missionary Alliance churches. And then right after that, you would have the Baptists and the Methodists and the Catholics and so forth and so on. Okay? But the largest bulk is the Christian Missionary Alliance. And that's where she went to church. And so that's where we started going to church. I'd have to stand up here and admit that I was not the best child of God during that time period. I understood what was going on. I thought I knew the material that I knew. But that's, I wouldn't have practiced it the way that I would look at now and say, hey, that's the right way to be a Christian. So the way I would classify myself would be, I would be what you would call a professing Christian, but not really living the life that you were supposed to live when you were a professing Christian. And that was the way it was for many, many years, into having the two girls that I have, until very recently. So before I go into what happens after that, I want to jump back a little bit and talk about my work, because this is going to open it up and explain the providence of God. There's a lot of moving parts here, so I have to kind of touch on each part as it combines together so you guys can see the picture. So my work experience, graduated from college, came out, management degree, thought I was going to come out and manage people. No, I didn't get to manage anybody. They're like, wait a minute, you have a 4-year in a management degree, but you have no work experience. Why are we going to let you manage anybody? So then I started working as an account manager. I'm just managing accounts for a small printing company. Anybody heard of Deluxe? Okay, so I started at Deluxe, worked for them for a little bit, transitioned over to I don't believe it exists anymore, American Express Trust. So American Express still exists, but American Express Trust no longer does. Right now it's known as Ameriprise. So if you've heard of Ameriprise, that's what I did. Was I was a third-party administrator. That's the person who helps run 401k plans for large corporations. So if you think about a company like American Express, they have a retirement plan. And their retirement plan has this book that's about probably that thick. Okay? That's their 401k plan document. That's how you're supposed to administer that retirement plan for that particular company. My job was to understand that document and to help the director in HR, anybody else at American Express who is responsible for that plan, to help explain some of that to them, to make sure all the testing was done, yada, 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 yada. That was my job. I deal with the top of the totem pole when it comes to retirements. How do I know that? Because I can see their accounts. I can see how many employees American Express has. I can see how many of them and how much money each of them have saved for their retirement. So guess who had the most money saved for retirement? Well, those who are at the very top. And I started struggling with this idea of I'm helping, but I'm not really helping those who need help the most, those who do not have the large chunk of change. So what I decided to do is I decided to try something in the similar area, but switch it over a little bit. So my wife mentioned to me, have you ever heard of a financial advisor? And I said, no. She goes, well, research that and get back to me and see if that's something that you might be interested in. So I researched it. A financial advisor is somebody who, on more of an individual level, you would help households plan for their retirement, plan their finances, help explain how stocks, mutual funds, all of that stuff works, how their retirement plan works. That's your financial advisor. That's the one that you hire to help you handle your finances. I said, all right, fine. Let's do that. Then I get to help the normal person. When I started out with that, what I did was I looked around, and there's a lot of tests that you have to pass in order to become a financial advisor. And you need sponsorship, which means you need a corporation to sponsor you. I decided to go with Edward Jones. Anybody heard of Edward Jones? Okay, so I went with Edward Jones because they were willing to pay for my tests. Now, obviously, if I flunk the test, then you get fired on the spot. But if you pass the test, then they hire you on as a financial advisor. So, speeding on along, one of the things that you have to do when you first get hired in as Edward Jones advisors is Edward Jones was built on door knocking. So if you're going to start your business, you have to walk around the neighborhood and door knock. Yes, every single door, knock every single door, talk to everybody in the neighborhood, tell them you're starting a business, blah, 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 right? That was what I did. Guess whose door I knocked? Pastor Lloyd Johnson. Pastor Lloyd is in Little Canada. I was going to be starting a business in that area. I was knocking on doors. I knocked on the door. Rana answers the door. And Rana says, yes. And Rana liked me. So I got a call from Pastor Johnson later. Said, okay, my wife told me to call you. Now, I'm going to stop there. So that's my work experience. Yes, I'm still a financial advisor. Yes, I'm still doing that and doing all the stuff that Paul just listed. That gives you an idea now of what is swirling. Okay? So I'm doing my job. I'm at a CMA church. My wife continues to pray, and she will let me know. She goes, I'm continuing to pray that God works in you and that you do more with the church. Instead of just attending on a Sunday, that's her prayer. She only admitted that to me many years later, but that was a prayer that she was putting in God's hand for a very long time. So how did God accomplish that? Well, God has his own ways, right? So what he did was, my wife is good friends with my first cousin's wife. And at an event that I was dragged to, the two of them got together, and my wife said to her, hey, her name is Ann. So Ann, can you help me? I'd like Komang and I to be in a Bible study, but we don't really know anybody who can do that. Since you and my first cousin's name is Cha, so since you and Cha are a lot further ahead in this matter than we are, would it be okay if you guys held a Bible study and we would come and study with you? Now, Anne wanted nothing to do with it because she didn't want to teach the Bible study, but God had other plans. She went to talk to Cha about it, and Cha said, no, that's fine. Let's do it. So what happened was Cha agreed to it, and when Cha agreed to it, they started a Bible study. They were going to do it for about four young couples, my wife and I included, all family. They were going to do it at their place. And what they were going to do were they were going to teach Chronicles of Redemption. I don't know if you've heard of Chronicles of Redemption. Chronicles of Redemption is a book that has been written by Pastor Linetti. You guys know who Pastor Linetti is? Okay, so Pastor Linetti is the pastor of Beacon of Hope, which is one of the church plants in the Twin Cities. Pastor Linetti developed this book because he spent 17 years of his life doing missionary work with the Taliablo, which is a indigenous group in Indonesia. Okay? He spent 17 of his years learning their language and then living with them and then teaching them, and then now they have a thriving church plant in that group. Well, he since then has moved back to the U.S. He worked down in Grace Community with Pastor MacArthur for a little bit, and then he came up here to do his church plant. Well, he wrote that book to teach the Taliablo. And then he decided that, wait a minute, since it worked with the Taliablo, why can I not use that to teach our own people? Now, what is the Chronicles of Redemption? The Chronicles of Redemption is the cliff notes of the Bible from Genesis all the way to Acts. So it essentially ties everything together. There's 13 chapters. He goes through and he just explains how the flow of redemption. What is the story of redemption? How does it start? How does it flow through? What happens when Jesus left and the disciples took over? Acts. Okay? So we were sitting there. We were doing this study. And, of course, I didn't take any notes because I grew up Lutheran with a Swedish twist, which means there was confirmation. So I thought, well, I already went through confirmation. I know all this stuff. I don't need to take any notes. This is just review for me. My wife, on the other hand, was taking notes profusely. And I was looking at her going, wow, you're really into this, aren't you? But, strangely enough, I shouldn't say strangely enough, godly enough, 3 weeks into that Bible study, I look over to my first cousin. I say, Cha, I got a strange question for you. I said, I have learned so much in the last 3 weeks, and here I was, I thought I understood this stuff, but I've learned so much in the last 3 weeks that I'd like to teach this to my siblings. Now, I'm the oldest of 9. My wife is the youngest of 16. Yes, same mother, same father. I just had to throw that out. So I told Cha, I said, Cha, because I'm the oldest, I can make my younger brothers and sisters come to my Bible study. So I'm going to hold a Bible study, and I'd like to teach this. Do you think I can do it? And he says, well, you're just getting started. You've only been 3 weeks into it. Why don't I help you? Why don't I attend the Bible study with you, and then we both can teach it together? I said, great, that would be awesome. So in case they ask me any questions I cannot answer, because I know they will, because there's a lot of stuff I cannot answer, then maybe I'll just throw it over to Chan and say, Chan, can you answer that for me? So now we have the Bible study with Ann and Chan Friday nights. And then we have the Bible study with my family on Monday nights. And then all of a sudden, Tia goes, well, that's just not fair. How can you offer this up to only your family when I have my family? What about my family? And I thought, well, yeah, that's okay. We can do your family. So let's put it out on Facebook. Let's just invite everybody and say, whoever wants to attend, there you go. We're having another class on Wednesday night. Anybody who wants to come. Or we already have one on Monday night if you want to come to the Monday night one. Okay? Well, there was more than enough people who said, yeah, sure, we'd like to attend that. So now we got 3 Bible studies going on. And then my mom and dad said to me, well, wait a minute. We can't understand English that well. Now, we can kind of get it, but the stuff, the vocabulary in there is a little fast for us. So is there any way you can interpret that into Hmong for us? And I thought, okay, fine. On Tuesday mornings, I'll come over and I'll interpret it into Hmong for you so that you guys can understand what we're teaching. All right. So you can, for all the moms and ladies in here, you can probably know what's coming next. So my wife sits me down one day and she goes, you do realize that we have like 4 sessions going through our house and all kinds of, that's a lot of people coming through here. That's a lot of cleaning. That's a lot. So I'm very sorry, but that's kind of way how God works. It's just the way it is. We're going to have to suck it up and do it, right? I know. I can see some of you shaking your head going, oh, he's asking for trouble. So this is how it's working, right? It's just swirling along, and I'm having the time of my life because I'm learning it on Friday, and I'm teaching it on Monday, and then I'm teaching it on Wednesday. And well, there's other stuff that's going on as well. I have a sister-in-law, so my wife's sister, one of my wife's sisters, she's been going to church for as long as I can remember. Wonderful lady. She decides that she wants to start her own church. So she goes, I'm going to start my own church. I need your help. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I got all these Bible studies. I got. But she's about the age of my mom, and she, you have that reverence for the elders. And so she looks at me and she asks, hey, I'd like you to help me with this. And I look at my wife, Tia. So I say, Tia, I don't know. I'm not so sure about this. And Tia goes, yeah, I don't know if you can handle. What is she asking you to do? Well, she wants me to do the paperwork. So she wants to start her own church. She wants to start a nonprofit. There's a lot of paperwork. She says, well, you're educated. You understand that stuff. You're even in the finance stuff. So this would make a lot more sense to you than me. Can you help me do the paperwork to get this church going? So I thought, okay, I'm the paperwork guy. All right, fine. So you can see I have a problem with saying no. I really should say no sometimes, but I don't. So I'm doing the paperwork for this church. And that's not really a church. It's just a group that's meeting from time to time. And it's really just another Bible study. So she has her friends who are coming to this Bible study, and she's trying to get them to learn more, and on and on and on and on. And my wife goes and attends it, but I've got enough on my plate. So I said, no, I'm not going to attend those Bible studies. We fast forward a little bit. She finds out that one of her friends who owns a video store, they decided they didn't want to do that business anymore. So what they decided to do was to sell all the videos, clean the place up, and make it into a sanctuary. Make it into a place where we could actually go meet there as a church. So they started meeting there on Sundays. My wife says, well, we're not really attending consistently the church, the CMA church that we're supposed to be going. So why not go support my sister and just attend the church on Sundays so that they have more bodies there? And what did I say? Sure. All right. So now on Sundays, we have this going on as well. We're going along. All of a sudden, my sister-in-law says, hey, Tia, I've heard that you're learning Chronicles of Redemption at your other Bible study. Would you mind teaching that to us at church? And Tia goes, well, yes, but I got a better idea. So she approaches me and she goes, you're the one teaching Chronicles of Redemption. You understand it a lot better than I do. And she's very good at this. And you see all the guys that are not attending the Bible study? They're just sitting over there. That's because it's the women teaching and they're not comfortable. So if you, being a guy, would stand up and teach, then the other guys would feel more comfortable and they would come and learn. I thought, that's a valid point. All right, okay. So now there's five, right? So now I'm teaching at church, and so I'm teaching CE at the little church. Well, see, you can see this is starting to really swirl. And then we had other issues, because now we're at a point where we really don't have leadership. I have my sister-in-law who's leading the church, and then as I'm learning more and more, as I'm teaching through Chronicles, as I'm reading more and more of the Bible, which I was supposed to be reading much, much more years previous, but I didn't do, I'm starting to realize something. It says that elders of a church are supposed to be men. And I knew where this was heading. I knew that what she was looking for was she was looking for to be an elder of the church. And that's why she wanted to start up the church. And so now I have this, okay, sister-in-law wants to be an elder. Bible says, nope, elders have to be men. I'm doing the teaching. I've been teaching that elders need to be men. I have to stand where the Bible stands. And so there developed a friction. Because now all of a sudden, I'm the one doing the teaching. she wants to lead. Everybody looks to me to see if I would give them the nod of okay for her to lead, and I'm not giving everybody the nod of okay. While this is going on, she brings in a pastor. So now this is a CMA pastor that has been a pastor for many years of his life already. He's already in his 60s. He's looking very close to retiring. He just wanted to come back and do a CMA church plant. And I didn't realize this at the time, but this was supposed to be a CMA church plant. But my sister never said that. My sister-in-law never said that to me. She just said, I wanted to do a church. So she brings in this pastor. He's working with us. He's doing a fabulous job. I'm just sitting there doing elder type stuff for the church. And then all of a sudden, he calls me up. Well, it's not all of a sudden. I kind of saw it coming. So he calls me up. He says, okay, she's putting a lot of pressure on me to change the way that I'm teaching, to change the way that I'm leading. I can't do it. I'm already 60-something. I'm ready to retire. This is the way that I'm used to doing it. I'm not going to be able to just flip the light switch and just switch over to what she wants. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to step down in 2 weeks. Step down in 2 weeks? But you're doing all the preaching. Like, yes, I'm just giving you a 2 weeks notice. I'm stepping down in 2 weeks. So now I have myself a little dilemma. And it gets worse. Because where we were meeting, they were looking now to sell the property. And so we no longer could meet there. Now we had to find another place to meet. Well, now let's go back to Pastor Lloyd. See, Pastor Lloyd and I became good friends because of the business that we had developed because of what I do. I decided, I need a church. I know Pastor Lloyd. Pastor Lloyd has a church. Why not? What do I have to lose, right? All he can say is no. And I said, all right, so why don't I contact Rana? So I called Rana. I said, Rana, I've got a huge favor to ask. So I gave her an idea of what's going on. I said, this is what I'm thinking. I don't know if it's possible. What do you think? And she says, no, I think that might be possible. Let me talk to Pastor. Obviously, he's going to need to talk to the other elders to make sure that this is going to be something that is worthwhile or that we can even accomplish. And then we'll call you back. So obviously, Pastor calls me back. He gives me a number. He says, this is Steve Dreger's number. Steve is our deacon at the time. Now he's an elder. I want you to contact Steve. Steve will work it all out with you. So now we have ourselves a place to go and worship in the afternoon. Okay. Now, this is where Paul comes in. Because now we have a place, and well, that's where Paul used to go to church, was Twin Cities Bible. And now everybody here realizes that Paul has a certain affinity for the Hmong people. Well, they obviously know that too. So as soon as we started worshiping there on Sunday afternoons, Steve decides that he's going to call Paul. And he says, hey, Paul, we've got a Hmong group here. They're worshiping here on Sundays. Just thought you might be interested. And of course, Paul then wants to meet whoever's in charge. So that happens to be me. So I meet Paul, and now we're best buds. Right, Paul? So what is this heading towards? Well, what this is heading towards, this is heading towards where we are now. So it is now 2 years since we've moved over to Twin Cities. We've been worshiping there every Sunday for the last 2 years. My sister-in-law and another family has since left the church because they've come to realize that the bulk of the people see the Bible as what is appropriate, what is right, what is true, and what she wants is not what the Bible says. And so she realized that she did not have the support to stay in the group. And she didn't want to be there because she really wanted to be an elder. And so she stepped out. And there was another family that was with her in the way they thought as well, and so they stepped out with her. Everybody else said, nope, this is the way it is. And I've then since found a pastor. He was a younger pastor. He's about my age. What I struggle with is I wanted somebody who was fluent in Hmong, fluent in English, able to exposit the word. I got 2 out of 3. That's not bad. So I am not fluent in Hmong. So I'm obviously fluent in English, but being that I grew up here, my command of Hmong is not nowhere close to what Paul is able to do. So because of that, I struggle a lot when I'm speaking Hmong because I don't have the vocabulary. I can hold a conversation. I can hold a conversation for quite a while, but to come up with a description of sanctification, justification, I just cannot find the vocabulary. So I wanted someone who was going to be in leadership with me, who was fluent in Hmong, who could understand how to put the words together, how do we describe this. So we have to translate not only from just Greek and Hebrew to English, but now to Hmong. And like Pastor knows, because he's done all the studying, every word in Greek cannot be found in every word in English, and vice versa. And the same thing is true with Hmong. There's a lot of things that we just don't have a word for. And how do you explain something when you can't go word for word? Well, you got to use phrases and paragraphs to explain one word. But whatever it takes. So that's really what we're trying to build. So I'm going to transition here a little bit now and talk more about the church. How am I doing on time? Okay. So what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about redeeming grace and what we're trying to do. So let's talk vision. Vision. Our vision is to be Bible-focused. That is the first thing that everybody, when we sat down as a group and talked about vision, everybody said we want to do what the Bible tells us that we need to do. And we may not do it perfectly, but that's the way that we want to run this. Okay? Secondly, fellowship in Christ, but with the Hmong. So what we're struggling with is I've talked to a lot of young Hmong pastors, those who are my age or younger, and what I'm getting from them is I'm getting a sense of they feel like they don't have the command of the Hmong language, and it's very hard for them to try to preach in Hmong to the older generation who are here. So what they do is, if they're going to start a church plant, they're going to say, we're going to do it in English. And if you have questions, you can ask us later. Well, that works for the younger generation, but it doesn't work for the older generation. The older generation, their command of English is just not good enough. They can speak with you. They understand what you're saying, but if you're talking up here, again, sanctification is vanity. If you start throwing words like that out, they can't follow you, and they don't know what you're saying. So we would like the church to be dual language at this point, bilingual. We'd like it to have English and Hmong. So when I'm preaching, I am preaching in English, and then I am translating certain sections that I feel I need to translate into Hmong for those who are older there so that they can understand and follow what I'm actually saying. So if it's a simple concept, we'll just leave it in English. If it's simple English words, it's fine. If we're hitting theological concepts that are a little bit more, a lot deeper, a lot bigger vocabulary, then we're going to have to break it down into the Hmong and explain it. And so that to us, we think, is something that we have to do. There are a lot of young Hmong pastors who feel that that is not necessary anymore. They're just going to go English and be done. And Paul and I seem to see eye to eye here that this is a transition period. Yes, it is true that there will be a point in time where it will probably just be English, that there will not be the Hmong language anymore. But until that comes, and because there's a large population of the elderly Hmong and those who are just, their command of English just isn't quite there yet, and they would just like to hear it in Hmong to just to validate what they thought they understood in what you just said in English, then we feel like we have to be able to do both for a time. So that's what we're trying to accomplish. The last thing, which is the drive of the mission, is expositional preaching. So I grew up Covenant. All of the pastors that I've ever heard in the Covenant churches and all the pastors that I've ever heard in the CMA churches have all been topical. I have never heard an expositional preacher. Until the very first time was when my first cousin, when he was teaching Chronicles to me, he said, There's this guy named John MacArthur. He's got this app. It's called Grace to You. Put that on your phone, and because you're a financial advisor and you drive around all day long, when you're going from one client's house to the next client's house, listen to John MacArthur. That was the very first time I heard an expositional preacher. And I thought to myself, boy, he yells a lot. Because I was listening to all his old stuff when he was much younger. I've now realized that as you listen to him throughout the years, he's mellowed out quite a bit, and he doesn't yell as much anymore. But if you listen to the stuff back in the 60s and the 70s, yeah, he's yelling all the time. But what I realized by listening to expositional preaching is I realized that, wow, my understanding deepened so much faster and so much quicker, and all the stuff connected so much easier because of expositional. And you can validate, because you're holding your Bible, you're looking at it, and he's going line by line, preaching word by word, and you can see if he's making stuff up or if that's really what is there. And so that, to me, I thought was an amazing thing. And why do we not do this? And I only realized later that, oh, no, that's the way it's always been. We've just changed it to topical. So now we're going to move back. And that's what I want. So among churches, they're all topical. There is no expositional preaching in the Hmong churches. Now, they may say they do expositional preaching, which, you know, we've heard people who say they do expositional preaching, but they really don't. And that's what we're trying to do. So are we aiming for the stars? Yes. But God has his own ways, and I'm going to trust that he's going to pull this together. But that's what we're looking to do. So we're looking for Redeeming Grace to be the very first Hmong expositional teaching, Bible-believing church that is going to hopefully help in the progress of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So that's where we're at. That's what we're trying to do. And we are eternally grateful for your support, for Twin Cities' support, for your prayers, for everything that you guys have done up to this point, for just sitting here and listening to me explain all of this. What is our challenges? Our challenges, well, first one is language, and I've alluded to that already. You have a third language that you're adding into the mix here, and you have to translate and you have to figure it out. And because I lack, and you know this, because I've explained to you what my career is, I'm not trained as a pastor. I have not been to seminary. And because of that, that also makes it hard to pick up on all the theological ideas, to be able to explain it correctly. So we have language, we have just the theology, we have culture. There's a lot of things that the Hmong culture now will practice. Why? Because there's a large population of Hmong here now. Remember I told you that you can't practice the religion when you're all by yourself? Well, now you're not all by yourself anymore. Now you have a huge Hmong population here that will allow you to practice the old religion. And they do. And then the people. I think it was John MacArthur that I heard say that if you think you're going to go to a perfect church, if you do find one and you show up to the perfect church, then it will probably won't be perfect anymore. And that's what we're looking at. We're fallen human beings, right? So we all realize that we're not perfect. We all struggle with our own things. And Paul's been there. Paul has seen the people struggle from the very beginning with my sister-in-law and all the other stuff in there. But again, it's the providence of God. I look back at it now, and I realize, wow, he orchestrated in the life of my first cousin. He orchestrated in the life of Paul. He orchestrated in the life of Pastor Lloyd. He orchestrated in my life, in my wife's life. He orchestrated in all these different things to bring us all together. Now, Paul has this crazy story that he told. I have a niece that I love dearly. She has, I think she has a phenomenal voice. She's kind of a hit on YouTube in the Hmong community because she can sing and she's not half bad looking either. So you add that stuff together and all of a sudden people want to watch. Well, Paul's actually a fan of hers. And I remember the very first time Paul described this to me, Paul says, "You won't believe this. I know who she is. The person who just walked up there to lead worship, I'm a fan of hers." And I thought, what? And then not only that, but Paul looks over and he sees my little daughter. She's not little anymore, she's 10. But Paul goes, "I know her." I said, "How do you know my daughter?" Paul goes, "I've seen her on Facebook." I said, "How?" Because Mona, that's my niece, Mona used to babysit my daughter, Lulu. And she would take these little videos and she would post it on her Facebook page. Well, because Paul's a fan of hers, Paul watches her stuff from time to time. And so Paul has seen my daughter fighting with her niece, with her cousin. And Paul realizes when he sees these two girls, and that again is the providence of God. How does that all fit together? How is it possible that people who have no idea who each other are, all of a sudden you show up one day in the same church, you're trying to build this thing together, and everybody kind of knows everybody? Now that to me is the amazing work of God. That is that providence that I keep talking about. And that is where I'm going to end. Is that because of that, then I trust that even though this seems to be a mountain that is gigantic to climb, so far, God has led the way. And he has done things that I never thought possible. Paul and I sit down sometimes when we talk to each other about what's going on, and we just go, wow, what an amazing God we have. That he can pull this together, and he can accomplish this with all these different peoples, with all this time that we never understood that this is where it was building towards. So what I would request from everybody is to do what you're already doing. Please continue to pray for us. Your support, your prayers are much appreciated. And I just want to say a huge thank you to Pastor, because you're sitting right there. Pastor's trying to put me through seminary. And so we're attending these monthly gatherings where he's explaining to me how to do expositional preaching. Just not me. There's other guys in here as well, along with Paul and Steve, but he's helping to explain to us. I describe it as watching The Wizard of Oz. And you know, you remember that scene where they pull the curtain and you realize that, wow, that's what Pastor Jeff is doing, is he's pulling the curtain and saying, this is what a pastor does for 40 plus hours a week to come up with 1 hour of the sermon. And when you get to see that, you really appreciate the kind of work that he does, why it takes so much time for him to do what he does, why you have to be through seminary and all that stuff, and understand Greek and understand Hebrew to put all this stuff together. So I just want to say thank you, Pastor, for taking the time. I know you don't have to do that. I know you're a busy guy, because I know what you do with all of your time as well. But he finds the time to be there. And that's really, again, the grace of God that we are all here. So I'm going to stop there and open up for questions. Paul, I don't know if you want to come up here and if anything. No? Okay.
I have a few questions.
Yes.
Our country. So first, was it a requirement that you attended the church, or was it only out of a sense of duty that you would attend the church? And then the second, like the church that sponsored the family. Mm-hmm. And then the second question would be, like, currently, what would be the state of, like, Christianity among people in Minnesota? Like, mm-hmm. is there an average, like a percentage, or even an estimate of how many are not just professing, but living?
Okay. Yeah,
can you repeat the question, because the recording won't pick it up?
Okay, so the first question was, with the churches that sponsored us, was there a requirement from the churches that you had to attend the churches, or was that just something where we felt a certain duty to attend? And I would say it's probably the latter. I would say that no, I don't ever recall. Now again, I was very young. But I don't recall ever feeling like we had to attend the churches because it was a requirement. I think it was more of the friendship that you had. You're in a brand new country. You have no idea what's going on. You don't understand the language very well. These were the ones who were coming to you once a week and helping you to understand. This is how you go to the grocery store. This is how this stuff works. This is money. This is the stuff that you've never seen. Oh, and that white stuff falling, that's snow, in case you don't know what that is. So that's... So that naturally would make you have that desire to say, okay. And Paul knows that the Hmong are very, what's the word I'm looking for? Hospitable. They're not going to say no to you if you say, hey, would you like to go to church with us? Chances are they're going to say, sure, we'll go to church with you. And so, no, I don't think there was any requirement. The second question has to do with the Hmong churches now. What percentage of the Hmong churches, or what percentage of the Hmong population are Christian? And I would say that if we went back about 20 years, I would go so far as saying that probably more than half was Christian. The CMA churches had a foothold in Laos before the Hmong even came here. Obviously, it was the Catholics who started it way back in the French, when the French were in charge of Southeast Asia. So it was the Catholics who first introduced God in that area. It was the CMA churches who had more of that Lutheran Protestant side, where they introduced that portion. So I would say that 20 years ago, it'd probably be more than half. Today, there was another large influx of refugees who came in recently within the last 10 years. A lot of them are not Christian. So now I would say probably closer to, I'm just guessing here, I'd say probably somewhere between 40 to 50. So there is a lot of work that still needs to be done in the community, because there's a large group of them that, I think I saw a hand over here first.
Yeah, it sounds to me, that you are doing essentially tribal evangelism with the older Hmong people. And using Steve Linetti's book, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if you are using Steve and Mary as resources, or the people they're connected to. They're old hands in tribal work.
Yeah. So the question is, obviously Steve and Mary have experience in what we're trying to accomplish, which is you have an indigenous group, a group that is newer to all of this, and you're trying to teach all of this at once and trying to get them up to speed. My first cousin is an elder at Beacon of Hope. I do ask them a lot for assistance. There is a little bit of a difference in opinion from Pastor Linetti and my first cousin and myself on how to handle it. I think from what I spoke to, not so much Pastor, because I haven't spoken to Pastor Linetti about this, but I've spoken to Cha about it. And he is more in the inclination that we need to bring the Hmong into the English-speaking churches, and then on the side, we can do maybe CE hour. You can kind of re-explain what Pastor taught through, or what the service was. And so we have a difference of opinion. I feel more like that is a lot harder to do than to put the onus of responsibility on the pastor and the leaders when they're presenting the message, to present it in a format that most can understand. So I've actually leaned more on you guys and leaned more on Twin Cities, because I've had more support on that angle of, okay, why don't you go ahead and try to build it as best you can, and if you need advice, if you need us to point you in the right direction on something, if you need us to teach you anything, let us know. And so that's kind of the way that I've been moving. Answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just one further thing. Steve is pretty well connected with, or was, with a lot of people, new tribes, people that are doing mm-hmm. a lot of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He very well may know somebody who's doing work with Hmong here or over in Southeast Asia yet.
He may. And I have not asked him that. So I will probably, that's a good idea. So I'll take that and I'll probably touch base with Pastor Linetti and see if we can work something out. Yeah.
The Hmong people are, what percent are overseas? I've heard the Hmong is a people group that have resided and kind of had troubles in various geographies in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Thailand, and so forth. What number, I mean, if you had a number that you could put to the Hmong people in Southeast Asia, how many people do you think are still there? And do they maintain their language, or do you find them blending into other languages from the surrounding cultures in Southeast Asia?
Yeah, I would say that there is probably 40% of the, more like high 30s, is probably what is in the U.S., and then the other 60 to 70% is all over the world. So there's a huge population in China. So not in China itself, but a little bit north of China. That's where we originated from anyways. So there is still a large group there. There's another large group in Laos and Thailand and Vietnam, all of the Southeast Asia area. There's populations of us in Europe, in Australia. Think of the allies of the U.S. Think of other countries who may have accepted the refugees after the Vietnam War. So there's populations going that way. So I would say that, from a population standpoint, the U.S. probably has close to the 30 to 40% of the whole Hmong population in the whole world. And then the rest of the world makes up the difference.
And do they maintain their language?
Yes, they do. The language is maintained. There is influences, though. So, like, for example, we have an English accent to the way we pronounce Hmong words. And if you speak to somebody in China, they have a Chinese accent to the way. And if you don't listen carefully, you can't understand what they're saying. So yes, there is a difference in just how the words are pronounced, but yes, it is the same language, and they are maintaining it. Yes.
Two questions. How many Hmong are there in people in the Twin City area? But and also, I've seen there are a couple of Buddhist temples. I think, or I assume that's what they are. Are they? From what I understand, the Buddhism wasn't widely practiced amongst Hmong.
Yeah. So I don't know the exact number in the Twin Cities. I know it's several
60 and 90,000
that's in the Twin Cities area. As for the Buddhist temples, because the Hmong had their own religion, and it's actually more of a mishmash of what we grew out of. So if you think about what the Chinese would practice. So the Chinese have this a similar ancestor worship in their practice as well. The Hmong have that. So that's the bulk of the religion, is that you believe that your ancestors, your grandmas, your grandpas, your great-great-grandparents, that they are now spirits in the spirit world. And if something goes wrong in your life, or if things aren't going that well, then you pray to them. You ask them to help you. So that's really the religion. That's where you're practicing. And there's also a belief, I've heard a component of animism as well, where you believe that certain things have spirits in them. So like the spirits in the trees, the spirits in the rocks, the spirits in the air, that sort of stuff. So it's a kind of a mix of the two. But the bulk of it is the ancestor worship. It's and even though they lived in Southeast Asia with the influence of Buddhism, because they had their own religion, there is not a large percentage. It's very minimal, probably less than 1% that actually practice Buddhism. The majority of them will either practice ancestor worship, or they will practice Christianity. So that's really the only two that they choose from. Is all of the Hmong that are here, it's either one or the other. It's either they're Christian or they are practicing ancestor worship. Okay. Any other questions?
Currently at Redeeming Grace, what tell us about some of the ministries that the Lord's doing among you, and regarding preaching and teaching, and I think you're still in fundamentals of the faith. Mm-hmm. You know, where are you in that, and kind of what are some of the things maybe in the next few years that you want us to pray about?
That's a very good question. So what we are currently doing is we are starting to teach through the book of Philippians. Pastor and I are taking turns. Pastor is going to teach for 2 weeks, and then I'm going to teach for 2 weeks, and then we're going to flip back and forth. And I thought that when he came in as pastor, I would just get to sit back and not have to preach anymore. And he said, well, you've been preaching for a while already, whether you wanted to or not, and so let's not let that skill just kind of dwindle away. So let's keep you up there so you can kind of keep. So that's what we're doing, is we're teaching through Philippians right now, expositionally. And then after church, we are doing Fundamentals of the Faith. We start out with two groups simultaneously. We had a younger group who English was no problem for them. They understood a lot of the stuff that we were talking about. It was review. And so we had a younger group, and then we had an older group. And Paul doesn't get to see the younger group as often as I did originally, but there was a gigantic difference in the way that Fundamentals flowed through. The younger group, they grew up in Christianity. They just needed to read it. They could understand it very well. And so boom, 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 chapter 1 done, chapter 2 done, chapter 3 done, chapter 4 done, boom, 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 all done. Okay. The older group, let's just say that it's a slow go. Because every time you teach a concept, you have to break it down. And then they have all kinds of questions that the younger group does not ask. Because what the younger group doesn't have is they don't have a huge history of what they've heard other pastors say, what they've heard or what they've understood the Bible to say for so many years. And so they have all this ingrained so-called knowledge over the years. And so now you're hitting up against that, and they're going, wait a minute, no. See, I've heard a pastor say this, and now you're telling me that that's not what it is? Wait a minute. So are you right? Is that pastor right? What? So because they've been in the CMA churches for so long, and they've heard so many things over the years, that it's actually very methodical. We have to kind of go back through and stay very basic, explain some very basic concepts, because they may have understood that wrong. The idea of election was a very hard concept to go through, because the CMA churches it's not about election. It's everybody. God is here, and Jesus saves everybody. And so that's what they grew up with. That's all they've ever known. And then all of a sudden to hear that you were chosen before the foundations of time, and that you were elected, and what? Wait a minute. And so that's the stuff that you have to slow down, and you have to really build. So we are probably in chapter 9, and we've been going on for months and months and months already. And it's probably going to take quite a while for us to finish. But I think it's a good endeavor. It's something that I think is very necessary for the group. The other thing that I'd have to mention is family. I told you my wife has a really big family. So if you think of 16 siblings, you think of they're all grown. My wife is the youngest, and I'm already 42. So you can imagine, you add in the kids and the grandkids, and we're looking at over 100 people, if not more. That in itself could be a church. That's a pretty large group of people, right? That's just my wife's side. That's not even including my side and all the other extended family. So with this church, that was the original idea. The siblings from my wife's side decided that they really would like to learn more. And they felt like they were learning more at this church than at their current church. And so they all started coming in so that they could learn more. But the idea is not to be a family church. The idea is what we're trying to do, and Paul and I have talked about this, it's about discipleship. And it's harder because you have to educate and then you have to kind of move them to the point where they can be discipled, move them to the point where they would actually feel now that they can do the service because they are capable or they feel like they're ready now. And so that's really what we're aiming for right now, is more just educating and discipling. Educating and discipling. Okay? So I just got the cut. So I'm going to step down. I want to thank you all for listening. If you have any more questions, I will be around and I'll answer them. Okay? Thank you.